On the evening of September 26, 2024, in MSU Bozeman Gaines Hall Auditorium, the four candidates running to fill the Associate Justice and Chief Justice seats on the Montana Supreme Court in this November 5, 2024 election debated issues and answered questions posed by moderator Missy O'Malley. It was hosted by the Gallatin Bar Association and the Montana State Pre-Law Club. KGVM was there to record the event, which was in two parts with a brief intermission. First was a debate between the candidates for the Associate Justice position between Montana 7th Judicial District Court Judge Catherine Bidigary and Montana 11th Judicial District Court Judge Dan Wilson. That was followed by the debate for the Chief Justice seat between retired Federal Magistrate Judge, United States District Court for the District of Montana, Jerry Lynch, and Broadwater County Attorney Corey Swanson. We also offer this recording of the debate in two parts. Here now are the candidates for the Chief Justice seat between retired Federal Magistrate Judge, United States District Court for the District of Montana, Jerry Lynch, and Broadwater County Attorney Corey Swanson.
And now we will hear for our Chief Justice candidates. Again, folks, if you are just joining us, or just as a little reminder, for the person that responds first, and in this case, it'll be Judge Jerry Lynch responding first, he will have 60 seconds. And then Corey Swanson, our county attorney of Broadwater County, will have 90 seconds to respond, and then it goes back to the final 30-second response from Judge Lynch, and then we swap for every other question. Okay, folks, are we ready? Okay, just an abundance of excitement here. Okay, folks, we're going to start with Judge Jerry Lynch. And our first question, we're going back to the qualifications and experience category. Judge Lynch, please describe one or more notable experiences in law which you believe have prepared you for a role in the Supreme Court.
You know, my answer to that question is a bit difficult because I don't want to seem arrogant. So to speak, my experience is so broad that there are so many cases, but I will focus on a couple. One is the where I acted as a mediation, the master in resolving the state of Montana's case against our code for natural resource damage in the upper Clark Fork River Basin, ended up in a $250 million settlement. Which is restoring the river. The other one is his lawyer ended up with predatory lending, bringing $50 million into the state, saved literally 6,000 homeowners from foreclosure. Those experiences have taught me that I know what fairness is.
Judge Lynch. Mr. Swanson, the question is, describe one or more notable experiences in the law which you believe have prepared you for a role in the Supreme Court.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me tonight and for all of you for coming. And Judge Lynch, I know you have to be remotely due to some things going on, so Julie and I send our prayers and support for your family. I would say that when you're practicing law for a long time, you find that it's a process. It's a process of growing through a lot of challenges. As a county attorney, I have a pretty broad practice doing a lot of prosecution and then representing counties on a broad range of civil cases. One of the more challenging cases I had was a few years ago when we had a man who killed one of our deputy sheriffs, a man and his son, and then they did a kind of a high-speed chase trying to kill multiple other law enforcement officers all the way from Townsend all the way to nearly Missoula before they were stopped. So that prosecution, which took 4 years, involved mental illness commitments to the Montana State Hospital, some trips to the Supreme Court before we even got to trial, and dealing with the victim, the family of the deceased officer, it was one of the more challenging cases that I've had to go through. What I learned from that case is that the system works if we have the patience patience, and we have the commitment to bring our issues all the way through, that we will, in fact, have the opportunity to achieve justice. That's the kind of commitment that Montanans are expecting every day for their system to give them, that if they trust the system and we have a commitment to justice, that they'll see just outcomes. And I believe that's why I want to be on the Montana Supreme Court, because I want to be one of those members that's assuring that that system of fairness and justice can be available for everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Judge Lynch, do you have a 30-second response?
I appreciate Mr. Swanson's commitment to being a prosecutor, but his experience is limited. And the more difficult cases that come before the Supreme Court, in fact, are civil cases, not to mention criminal cases, but they are civil cases, and I just have a much broader experience. He does not have the experience that I have in every aspect of civil law as well as criminal law.
Seeing in the qualifications and experience category here, Mr. Swanson, our next question is for you. How do you approach a case where law is unclear or conflicting?
Well, and that's often the case. There are many cases where the law is unclear or conflicting. We've learned through fundamentals of legal research how to do that kind of a research and analysis to determine what the law actually means. I'll give you an example. Last year, there was a big dispute over property taxes and over the statute that dealt with how counties levy property taxes for the 95 mills, which is the state K-12 education support system. The statute's very unclear. The statute's unworkable. We've been using the same methodology for over 20 years, but it's when you get down to it, it's very confusing. So what I did in that case is I protected my client. I advised my client to levy the entire 95 mills, but to hold back the balance that was disputed under protest until we heard from the Supreme Court. And then ultimately we got a decision. So in that case, what I do is I first do extensive research, and then secondly, I focus on how to protect my client from the risk of an adverse decision. But then when you do that on the court, you have to then more broadly focus not just on any particular client, but the clear understanding and interpretation of the law for everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Judge Lynch, how do you approach a case where the law is clear or unclear or conflicting?
Well, obviously, as a judge for nearly 14 years, a little short, I had to deal with those questions. I had to deal with questions where the law was unclear. What I did, and what I have repeatedly said, is I did my best to, number one, master the law and get a command of the facts, because obviously applying the law in a particular case depends on having a command of the facts. I have done that. I have done it for 14 years as a judge. I did it as a in a different sense. It's a different sense being an attorney prosecuting a case from being a judge. And that has to be understood by folks that it is different. But I have done that. I have a career I'm very proud of, and I have a record that people can look at.
Thank you. And your 30-second response, Mr. Swanson.
Yes, thank you. So the thing you have to realize about, and I'm not disputing Judge Lynch's long career, but he's operated mainly in the federal system. And we're talking about the state system, state court system, which is different than the federal system. And there is not a constitutional prerequisite that says you have to have been a judge before you're on the Montana Supreme Court. Chief Justice McGrath was never a judge before he was on the Supreme Court. Neither was Justice Baker. Neither was Justice Rice. We want a variety of experiences among the seven so that we can all collectively get to the best and wisest decision using all of our varied backgrounds. I bring a background both as a prosecutor and through some leadership experiences I'll talk about later that's unique, and then it's going to complement the rest of the members of that court.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. So we've moved to our last question in our qualifications and experience category, and Judge Lynch, the question is for you. Please discuss or describe your experience working in diverse legal environments or on cases involving varied cultural perspectives, and how have those experiences served to shape your judicial philosophy?
Both as a practicing attorney, I had the pleasure of representing very many Native Americans in individual cases, also some tribal entities in cases. And I think that's important for a justice, if a person wants to be a justice on the Supreme Court, to have done that. cultural differences. The other, the one thing I was involved in and I'm very proud of is the Voting Rights Act case that I mediated and was able to settle as a magistrate judge that established voting satellite offices on all of our reservations in Montana. Very, very progressive thought. And why I'm proud of that is because I think anybody that gets involved in voter suppression should not be running for the Supreme Court.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Again, Mr. Swanson, the question is, please discuss or describe your experience working in diverse legal environments or on cases involving varied cultural perspectives, and how have those experiences served to shape your judicial philosophy?
Well, I've done some federal tribal work as well, and that's certainly something a lot of people in Montana have experience with. But I want to tell you about another experience. When I was in law school, I was competing in the Jessup International Moot Court, and we went to the world competition at Washington, D.C. I loved how we had people there from countries all over the world, and every one of them, even people who are from countries with dictatorships, were focused on the rule of law in that process. And then after law school, I got deployed to the Middle East with the military, and I happened to be in Iraq, and I helped put some law students in touch with the University of Montana moot court team. So these law students were Kurdish students in Sulaymaniyah, and it was their first ever opportunity to compete in, to actually have a free law school and to compete in moot court. I put them in touch with the University of Montana team, and David Aronofsky and Sally Cummings were able to actually get some donors together, and they paid to bring the Iraqi team to the world competition in Washington, D.C., and that was an amazing experience to help those law students focus on an opportunity to come work on the rule of law issues in the United States through that organization.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Judge Lynch, do you have a 30-second response?
I'm very passionate about the right to vote. When I was a magistrate judge, I would counsel the new citizens that they naturalized on how important it is to all of us to stand up to voter suppression, because that's the bedrock of our democracy. What I don't understand is why Mr. Swanson, maybe he can explain that, why he would participate in defending a person that was trying to suppress votes in the state of Montana, over 6,000 votes, directed mainly at Native Americans and students. I don't understand that, because I'm passionate about that.
We don't have time for a response on that.
Are we wrecking the format if I respond to that?
We don't have time for a response on that. We do not. We're going to move on to our next category of questions.
I'll find a time to respond.
I know you will. That'll be perfect. We're moving on to judicial philosophy and decision making. And Mr. Swanson, we do start with you on this question. Appellate court justices, in particular, often have divergent views on the methodology of constitutional decision making. Please explain to us in general your fundamental belief in regard to interpretation and application of decisions involving the Montana Constitution as well as the U.S. Constitution.
Well, the other two panelists before really did a good job of answering this question, explaining the difference in our federal system between federal or state law, and I generally have a textualist approach to that. So I think that's good. But I think a fundamental of good interpretation is to actually know the facts of what you're talking about. So I want to answer Judge Lynch's argument that I suppressed voters. That's not what happened. Here's what happened. He's forgetting to tell everybody that we won that case, okay? So I represented an entity that did something stupid. And the rules of ethics as an attorney tell you that when your client does something stupid, you don't just run away from them and abandon them. You say, okay, I'm going to represent you despite the fact that you did something stupid, and I'm going to help you work your way through that. And that's what I did. And I helped my client work their way through the aftermath of something stupid. And ultimately, Judge Malloy ruled in our favor. The plaintiffs dismissed the case. There was actually no claim that the plaintiffs could advance. And the result of that, in my view, was my client was much better informed to not do stupid things like that in the future. But my ethical obligations as an attorney required me to help my client through that mistake, not abandon them when they had done something stupid.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. So, Judge Lynch, once again, the question is, appellate court justices in particular often have divergent views on the methodology of constitutional decision-making. Please explain to us in general your fundamental belief in regard to interpretation and application of decisions involving the Montana state constitution as well as the U.S. Constitution.
All right, I'm going to digress a moment to say that Judge Malloy did not rule in favor. People can look it up in the federal supplement and see Judge Malloy's decision on the case I'm referring to. Now, as to the question, the precise question, the last time I checked, there are like 8 views of how you have methodology of interpreting the Constitution. I recently read a marvelous book by Stephen Breyer, retired justice of the Supreme Court, on his view that he chose pragmatism over textualism. The point being, textualism confines the interpretation to the times when the Constitution was drafted, most particularly the United States Constitution. The Montana Constitution, obviously, is much later, 1972 versus the 1700s. Pragmatism is what is necessary because times change. And the authors of both constitutions had aspirational goals. You cannot capture everything in simple language. It's very difficult, but they had aspirational goals. And so when a judge now sits and interprets the Constitution of either the United States or the state of Montana, they have to bear in mind how aspirational goals affect that and the pragmatism of today's society. For instance, we did not know that the Fourth Amendment would allow someone to serve as a cell phone back in 1776. Just an example.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Mr. Swanson, your 30-second final response.
So when a federal judge denies an ex parte restraining order, and when a federal judge signs a motion to dismiss with prejudice because the plaintiffs file a motion to dismiss their own case, that's called winning the case. That's what happened. What's interesting about that case, though, is that Judge Lynch was recently on a podcast talking about this case, and he said that I had a bad soul for representing my clients. Think about that. If you want to be in front of a judge where your client's done something stupid, or even your client's been accused of a crime, and you want the judge to say, that lawyer has a bad soul because they represented somebody who had a fundamental right to counsel. It's our job to represent people even when they've done something stupid, even when they've been accused of something, liability.
Thank you,
or a
Mr.
crime.
Swanson.
And judges shouldn't be saying they have a bad soul because they did it.
Moving on to our next question, Judge Lynch, we start with you. Stare decisis, a Latin phrase meaning to stand by things decided. It is a legal doctrine that requires courts to allow the rules and principles of previous cases when deciding cases with similar facts. Now, how do you view the doctrine of stare decisis and its application in judicial decision-making?
Well, stare decisis is one of the fundamental things of our Constitution. I shouldn't say Constitution, but one of the fundamental prospects of how we make decisions. Why? Because it provides stability. If there are certainly cases that were wrongly decided at some point in time, but stare decisis allows people to lead their individual lives, knowing what the Constitution provides them, the protections, the rights the Constitution provides them. It also provides businesses the understanding that this is what the law provides. So when there is a change, a stark change, and not following stare decisis, it's a shock to the legal system. I will just say this, even though it's the law of the land now, the Dobbs decision overruling Roe versus Wade, that was a shock, not just to the legal system, but to the entire United States. So, stare decisis, it's important to follow precedent where appropriate.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Mr. Swanson, once again, just the question for you here. Stare decisis, a Latin phrase meaning to stand by things decided. It is the legal doctrine that requires the courts to follow the rules and the principles of previous cases when deciding cases with similar facts. Now, how do you view the doctrine of stare decisis and its application in judicial decision-making?
I agree with the explanation that we heard not only from the prior panel, but from Judge Lynch in terms of what stare decisis is and the role that it plays. And it's important not only from the court's point of view to look at prior precedent as applied to a certain set of facts and determine if that is consistent with the ruling that you should be making or it helps guide the ruling you should be making. It's also important from the point of view of people that are planning their lives and lawyers that are advising their clients. So the last thing I would add to that is it's very important when courts issue their opinions that they are then drafting the opinion in a way that's going to create a precedent that will endure. And by that I mean you should be deciding cases narrowly based on the facts that are actually in the law that's actually in dispute between that case. Drafting a narrow holding will do a couple things for you. Number one, it will give you the clearest legal ruling to resolve the dispute of the parties that are before you. Secondly, it will give you the clearest precedent that you can write going forward. The concern I have is sometimes courts find the prior precedents that may be a little bit inconvenient, and if a court is ignoring those prior precedents, not explaining why perhaps they're distinguished and why they're different, or acknowledging that this precedent, which is a little inconvenient, but we still need to follow it, if courts gloss over some of those prior cases that are a little inconvenient or at odds with their holding, that creates confusion for everybody that's trying to read your case and figure out what your precedent actually is. So narrow decisions with clearly drafted opinions are essential for really stable law and clear precedent.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Judge Lynch, your final 30-second response here.
I would agree with Mr. Swanson on the courts deciding issues narrowly based upon the law that exists and the facts before them in a particular case. I'm not sure what he means by inconvenience. I've just not seen that with our Supreme Court in my tenure. So I'm not sure what he means by inconvenience. I think our justices have done a very, very good job in narrowing the issues that they have to decide in accordance with precedent.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Moving on to our next question, Mr. Swanson, you start here. A hallmark of judicial decision-making is to apply impartiality and fairness in spite of one's personal beliefs. Now, there are some who are concerned about the application of fair and impartial, the standard in the contrast of personal biases in judicial decision-making. How do you ensure to the public of impartiality and avoiding what is commonly referred to as legislating from the bench?
So I've been traveling this state since I got into the race shortly after Thanksgiving. And everywhere I go, I have heard universally from nearly 100% of the people that that's all they're asking for is a fair and impartial court. They don't want a liberal court. They don't want a conservative court. They want a court that's fair and impartial. So I fully agree that that is the hallmark of what people are asking for on the Supreme Court. There's been a lot of discussion about political cases this year, but we have to remember the vast majority of Supreme Court cases are not political. They're just the garden variety work that all of you are doing for your clients that matter a lot to you and matter to your clients, but aren't politically charged cases. And so the thing we need to remember is the methodology of how the court decides cases, deciding them narrowly, as I just discussed, is the same methodology we should apply whether it's a boring, ordinary business law case or a very controversial political case. And that's absolutely what I commit to doing. My view of the law and the policy is not important. My correct interpretation of it is what matters.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Again, Judge Lynch, the question is, a hallmark of judicial decision-making is to apply impartiality and fairness in spite of one's personal beliefs. Now, there are some who are concerned about the application of fair and impartial standard in contrast to personal biases in judicial decision-making. How do you ensure to the public of impartiality and avoiding what is commonly referred to as legislating from the bench?
Well, first of all, I would say experience. I have a record as a judge. People can look at my record and they can see if I've been impartial. I believe I have. And I would say the people supporting me people supporting me, you can look and see they agree. I have lawyers from all across the spectrum. I would say that it sometimes may be difficult to separate your political views. I don't think so. I was able to do that. But I would disagree with Mr. Swanson in the fact that we may travel in different circles. Because when I travel across the state, which I have since March of last year, I find people saying, we need a court of integrity, a court of impartiality, and a court that will stand up for our constitutional rights. Elections have consequences. I understand that. Everybody understands that. But the importance of a constitutional democracy, which we are in Montana, is to protect individual rights from a supermajority. It's not a novel concept. It's a marvelous concept. But that's what the Montana Supreme Court has to do. It's what the Montana Supreme Court has done. And I think everybody that goes before the Montana Supreme Court gets a fair shake. So again, I think we travel in different circles.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Mr. Swanson, your final 30-second response to that?
Well, the circles that I travel in are very varied. They're from very liberal groups to very conservative groups to groups that really are completely apolitical. And I haven't heard anyone tell me that they don't want a fair and impartial court. So I'm not sure what circles Judge Lynch is traveling in. The thing you have to remember about policymaking or lawmaking from the legislature versus the court is that the Constitution gives guarantees of government structure, government function, and fundamental rights. But within those boundaries, the legislature has policymaking authority. I want to ensure that the court respects that authority, upholds constitutional rights, but doesn't interfere improperly in the legislative function.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. We're now moving on to the section of questions for key issues and public concerns. And Judge Lynch, we do start with you on this one. How do you view the role of the judiciary in protecting individual rights and liberties?
Well, the court, under our constitutional democracy, which I emphasize, is designed to be the arbiter of the final issues of law, both statutory law and constitutional law. When it comes to personal rights and liberties, what we have to protect us are our constitutional rights. And the court has to be impartial. It cannot be politicized. It cannot be at all impartial. That is what protects a woman's right to reproductive freedom. It protects everyone's. I shouldn't say just women's. Everybody's right to privacy, individual dignity, and equal protection of the law. That is what the court is for. I was concerned the other day when I read by the Senate Majority Leader Steve Fitzpatrick that said, well, you know, in the reality of things, the court is the smallest branch of government. It does not have the same power as the legislative branch or the executive branch. Mr. Fitzpatrick, you are wrong.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Okay, so the question again, Mr. Swanson, how do you view the role of judiciary in protecting individual rights and liberties?
Yeah, it's more than the judiciary. I think it's also the bar. So as a prosecutor, I work with law enforcement, and I'll give you an example. We had a case last year where a law enforcement officer put a defendant in custody and did not give them a Miranda warning and then talked to them, and they made an admission. So when that came to me, I went to the defense lawyer and I said, well, I'm not even going to try to get that confession in. It's obviously inadmissible. And so as a prosecutor working with defense lawyers, there's a lot of those calls we make on a daily basis where we can see where we have to protect the rights of that defendant. The judiciary then, in the event that we disagree, has to make that decision and has to uphold those fundamental rights and has to weigh the facts and the law of that situation. The concern is what Judge Lynch just said. He just said the judiciary can't be impartial when it comes to evaluating these issues. Well, remember that the judges don't go and hunt these cases. They're brought to us, and we expect good advocates on both sides to raise the issues and bring them to us. And we don't presume people are guilty. We don't presume violations. We don't presume laws are constitutional. Our case law says we presume laws are constitutional unless proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So we have to be impartial as the judiciary. Judge Lynch has been criticizing the legislature for an entire year, and I understand that he's concerned with things they did back in 2021. I'm concerned about things that are going to happen in 2025. I want to know that we have an impartial Supreme Court to deal with whatever those new disputes are going to be.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Judge Lynch, your 30-second response.
I'm not that combative with the legislature. What I have said from day one, contrary to Mr. Swanson, is that I will stand toe-to-toe with the legislature to protect the independence of the judiciary. When we have Senate select committees that suggest to a district judge that there's a penalty if you don't follow our subpoena of a fine, loss of limb, or life, I mean, what are you talking about? I believe the legislature is attempting to make a power grab, that the court is what's left to protect that.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Our next question, Mr. Swanson, you'll start here. What is your stance on the balance between state and federal authority?
Yeah, I thought the previous panel did a good job of explaining the difference between state law, state authority, or federal law, federal authority. The thing that I would add to that is that there are times when there are issues that are exclusively state law issues. There may be a federal case, a federal court that's doing a case where it requires an interpretation of Montana law. That federal court can certify that question to the Montana Supreme Court to get a specific interpretation of how Montana law or Montana Constitution governs that issue, and then that answer goes back to the federal court. Conversely, if two parties get into a lawsuit in state court, one of them may realize this is actually a federal issue. They can remove that case from state court to federal court because that's where it's properly being heard. So I agree with what was said previously as to the Constitution. I just wanted to highlight that mechanism because there is some interplay that happens between the two levels of court, but they're both doing it in a way that respects the other's jurisdiction.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Once again, Judge Lynch, the question is, what is your stance on the balance between state and federal authority?
Well, first of all, under the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, that is the controlling law, states can, in fact, as Montana has done, pass a constitution that is more protective of individual rights than the United States Constitution. And Montana's Constitution is a perfect example. Our right to privacy, our right to individual dignity, our right to a clean and healthful environment is broader than the United States Constitution. In terms of what Mr. Swanson was talking about, yes, there are the federal courts sit most often as the state court under what's called diversity jurisdiction. So I sat as a state judge, so to speak, in many, many cases deciding state law. That's what the diversity jurisdiction issue is all about. But what I want to say is that the constitutions are separate. Again, the United States Constitution controls where appropriate. The Montana Constitution's rights are more pervasive, and we have to protect those constitutional rights. I say that over and over again, especially people's right to privacy.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Your 30-second response, Mr. Swanson?
I have nothing further. I think we go to the next question. Thank you.
Fantastic. Our next question, Judge Lynch, we start with you. What is your view of the judiciary's role in addressing significant public policy, like issues along the lines of voting rights, access to abortion, and climate change?
Well, first of all, the courts are not in the political game, or should not be. So the role in terms of current public issues is that they interpret the Constitution, the justices interpret the Constitution to protect the rights of individuals. I keep emphasizing, and I will say it again, we are a constitutional democracy. The point being that we're not a simple democracy where the majority rules. We are a constitutional democracy where the courts fundamental job to protect individual rights against the supermajority. That's not being combated with the supermajority legislature, as suggested by Mr. Swanson, simply doing the job the court has been delegated to do.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. And once again, the question, Mr. Swanson, what is your view of the judiciary's role in addressing significant public policy with issues like voting rights, access to abortion, and climate change?
Yeah, I agree with what the prior panelists said, that those are public policy issues. The legislature has the responsibility to enact laws and to establish public policy on those issues. There are times when that enacted policy may be subject to litigation, whether it's an interpretation or whether it's a constitutional challenge. When that happens, it's really important for the court to ask themselves when they're entertaining, for example, a constitutional challenge, are we being clear in our focusing on our constitutional role, or are we overstepping into the role of the legislature and striking down a policy we may not like but may be fully constitutional? And that's a tough question. Those will be probably some of the toughest questions that we have to face. The key here is that the court has to be impartial, has to be fair, has to be unbiased. As we've talked about with Judge Lynch and myself, Judge Lynch has been saying over and over again that it's the court's job to fight against the supermajority. It's not the court's job to fight in those areas. It's the legislature's job to fight if you want to change policy. It's the court's job to be impartial and to interpret the law and the disputes that come to you. Now, in 2021, Judge Lynch was appointed to two different boards by Governor Bullock, and they carried over to Governor Gianforte. The legislature declined to confirm Judge Lynch for both of those boards. Judge Lynch said that those proceedings were a farce, and that was in the beginning of the 2021 session. Number one, if they choose not to confirm someone, that's not a farce. That's a valid legislative function. But secondly, I'm concerned that that kind of prior language is potentially causing Judge Lynch to be more antagonistic toward the legislature than he should be.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Mr. Lynch, your 30-second response.
I'm not antagonistic to the legislature, but I will stand up toe-to-toe for the independence of the court. With regard to the two committees I served on, it was the first time in the history of Montana that a governor did not honor interim appointments to the particular boards. There were people that were very qualified, more qualified than me, perhaps. But that is nothing to say. It was a farce. I mean, I will say that again. It was a farce. I appeared before the legislature. They didn't ask me a question of any significance. So we have a difference, but I will say this, and I know I'm running over time. I am not at all opposed to the legislature, but I am in favor, and I will support judicial independence.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. And gentlemen, thank you for your feedback on key issues and public concerns. We will now move along with ethics and accountability. And Mr. Swanson, we start with you first for this question. What measures will you take to maintain transparency and accountability in your judicial conduct?
So are you going to ask the question later about recusal? Okay, I'll save that part for then. Okay, so when we as members of the court deal with any issue, we have to, first of all, as I've talked about over and over again, we need to be fair and impartial. We need to not make up our mind prior to the case existing or prior to the case coming to us. We need to be very careful about not pre-stating conclusions to various cases. But going to the transparency issue, one of the things that I've noticed over the years is that there's a lot of misunderstanding as to what the court actually does. And I think that it's time for the court to find a way to be a little more open to the public in terms of outreach. I think the oral arguments, more oral arguments in more varied places would be very helpful. I think some kind of engagement at the school level, the high school and the college level, would be really good to help dispel some of the, I guess, misunderstanding or mystery behind how the court functions. And that's really where I think our next effort should be, is getting out into the public so they can see really what we're doing is not mysterious and it's not secretive. It's simply the process of how the courts function.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Again, Judge Lynch, the question is, what measures will you take to maintain transparency and accountability in your judicial conduct?
I think I'm all for transparency with the courts. I do think the courts are transparent. But everyone has to understand, what are you talking about? Are you saying transparency? Not you, but people in general. Are you talking about transparency in their deliberations? Because if you open up deliberations, in my view, to public discussion, then statements that are made by the justices before they come to a final resolution can be misconstrued. Everything the court does is public record at the end of the day. Every decision they make is public record. However, their internal discussions, I personally don't think should be subject to television, if that's what people suggest. I would also say this. The federal system in which I participated, we had transparency in terms of having to file everything about our finances every year. I think that's a good idea because it gives people the information to know whether if I'm sitting as a justice on a case that I have some financial or political interest in that case. I think that would be a positive step in the state of Montana.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Once again, the final 30-second rebuttal. Rebuttal, I said it again.
Rebuttal. I'm going to waive my rebuttal because I agree with what Judge Lynch said.
Okay, wonderful. No rebuttal. Perfect. We are moving along to a question here. Everyone's going to start using that word. I just started a new trend.
It's already on Wikipedia.
So we're moving along. Judge Lynch, you'll be answering this question first. Please briefly discuss the recusal process, and specifically, how do you plan to address potential conflicts of interest?
I've always, in my 14-year career as a federal judge, I always address conflicts of interest. I never had. I do believe that it's a very, very important thing for justices to identify and acknowledge that if they do have a conflict of interest, they should step aside in a particular case. What concerns me in this race is that my opponent, Mr. Swanson, has the largest lobbying firm in the state of Montana running his campaign. Now, he's going to say some excuses and so forth, but from a public perspective, if the public perceives that there's an impropriety, a perception of unfairness, then the judge should step aside. My question is, what does he intend to do with this entity that is representing all kinds of the major lobbyists in the state? I just would like to know what he says about that.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Again, Mr. Swanson, the question is, please briefly discuss the recusal process, and specifically, how do you plan to address potential conflicts of interest for you?
So I have a longtime friend who I went to college with and had many experiences with. He was a groomsman in my wedding, who is my campaign manager. When I asked him to do that, I knew he had experience in campaigns. I couldn't tell you any of his clients, and nor do I care. However, if any of those clients have a case before the court and there's a concern as to my fairness, then guess what? They can notify the court, and I have the opportunity to recuse myself. And Justice Baker would be the acting Chief Justice, and she would appoint somebody to replace me. So that's not a concern. We'll handle that the same as if somebody I prosecuted had a case before me, then obviously I would recuse myself from that person's case. Here's the concern that we're hearing in terms of injecting this allegation of bias. Judge Lynch previously stated that because this firm, my campaign guy's firm, also represents industries that are extractive industries and extractive corporations, that we should all be suspicious of that. Well, that's kind of biased, isn't it? Because there are a lot of cases before the Supreme Court where the litigant is a business or a corporation that has some kind of role in extractive industries. And so if you're a lawyer that's practicing before the court and you've heard now from Judge Lynch that someone has a bad soul because they represent somebody that did something stupid and he doesn't like, or if they represent a corporation that we should all view suspiciously because they do extraction, well, look at your phone. That comes from mining. That's my concern, that Judge Lynch is actually attacking me for bias, trying to hide his own.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Judge Lynch, do you have a 30-second response?
He protested too much. What I'm saying is that if those folks are running your campaign, then there's a question in the eyes of the public, and there should be, of whether you are impartial. I'm not prejudging anything. It concerns me as a citizen that you have lobbyists running your campaign. Yes, you can talk about it and try to talk over it, but at the end of the day, it's public perception that's important. The court gets its authority and only authority from the public believing it is fair.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Mr. Swanson, our next question, kind of piggybacking this, what is your stance on judicial transparency, particularly regarding deliberations of the decision-making process?
Well, I'll just finish the last little back and forth we had. So Judge Lynch's campaign manager is also managing the campaign for a statewide Democratic candidate. I believe elections should be nonpartisan for judiciary. That's what I'm trying to accomplish, trying to defend and fend off the partisan folks that are trying to get involved, frankly, on both sides. And I'm not suggesting he's inviting that either. We're both having difficulty trying to fend that off. This should stay as a nonpartisan race. As to the transparency issue, I agree with what Judge Lynch said earlier, that when you go to that conference, that initial conference after a case has been briefed or argued, that initial conversation it may not be the final result. It may not reflect the final vote. It may not reflect the final reason for a decision. If you talk to members of the Supreme Court, they'll say that sometimes something started out 5-2 one way, and by the time it was finalized, it was 4-3 the other way. And someone who thought they were writing the dissent ended up writing the majority of the opinion. So I agree, those conferences are important to our deliberative process. And if you open them up, people are going to make premature decisions that won't be correct.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Again, Judge Lynch, the question is, what is your stance on judicial transparency, particularly regarding the deliberations and the decision-making process?
You know, I think I spoke to this before. I believe in judicial transparency. I agree with Mr. Swanson. There should be more oral arguments. And that allows the public to see at least the arguments presented by the parties. But the deliberative process, I focus again upon this, that the deliberative process cannot be too encumbered by being in the public view because you may not get the frank discussion that you need to make a decision, and it can lead to people making drawing conclusions about what the court should do or should have done or that. So the transparency, I think, is there. More oral arguments would be good, but I believe in judicial transparency, no doubt about it. I do think that, as I mentioned before, I think requiring all the justices to disclose their financial information would be a tremendous stride forward in Montana.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Mr. Swanson, do you have a 30-second response?
I don't disagree with anything he said. I do think the financial disclosure would be important. And then I think one of the issues, this is barely related, but I'm going to say it because I won't get a chance to say it. One of the emerging issues we have to deal with is the use of AI in legal research or legal writing. I anticipate that we will see a new rule that says that attorneys are required to disclose to their clients and potentially to the court if they've used AI significantly in drafting your pleadings or your briefings or whatever. So I think that may be another transparency issue that affects all of us.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. And that takes care of our ethics and accountability portion. We are going to jump back to just a couple more questions of our qualifications and experience. And Judge Lynch, we start with you. Can you discuss a challenging case which you engaged and how you approached it?
Again, where do I begin? I had so many challenging cases in my nearly 40 years of experience, but the two that stick out in my mind, actually three. One was where I was a practicing attorney, and I sued two of the largest predatory lenders in the country. It was a unique case based upon the Montana Consumer Protection Act, brought $50 million into the state of Montana via two settlements that saved almost 6,000 homes from foreclosure. Secondly, the medicine, wandering medicine case was a case which I mentioned maybe earlier that I was able through mediation to get satellite offices on all reservations in Montana, not all of implemented, but it's turned out to be a marvelous device that people who are economically disadvantaged have a right to vote.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Okay, Mr. Swanson, the question is, can you discuss a challenging case which you engaged and how you approached it?
Yeah, the case that comes to mind is when I was a new lawyer and I got into a firm that was part of the lawsuit against Goldman Sachs and Milbank Tweed, which was Goldman Sachs is obviously the big bank. Milbank Tweed is a law firm, one of the biggest law firms in the world. And we were suing them on behalf of the shareholders of the Montana Power Company and Touch America, because when their deregulation happened, what ultimately happened was based on really bad advice from Goldman Sachs and their attorneys that pensioners and people who had invested in Montana Power their whole lives lost a ton of money, and we ended up suing them to recover a lot of that damages. That was a very complex case because it was class action, and we had two competing classes that all came to. We ultimately did it over three different mediation conferences. Some of the biggest trial lawyers in the state were there. Our co-counsel was out of San Francisco, and we ended up in, it was federal court in front of Judge Haddon. We ended up with the largest settlement in the history of Montana. I was the low man on the totem pole, but in that process, it gave me a good view of all the things that we could accomplish to help thousands of people who had been either defrauded or completely, they'd lost their money because of the negligence of corporate leaders and the greed that they exhibited. It was astounding. So that was one of my early cases. It was a very formative case that gave me a lot of experience and a lot of belief in what's possible in the law to help people.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Judge Lynch, do you have a 30-second response?
It's one thing to be a starter, it's another thing to be a backup. And I say that just to be frank about, you know, actually prosecuting the case versus being on the sidelines. The other case I want to mention that I'm very proud of is the case in which the woman, a Jewish realtor from Whitefish, Tanya Gersh, was bullied by white supremacists. The case came before me. He tried to evade service or process. I made the decision in that case that awarded her $14-some million. But the point is, it was a First Amendment case. Respect the First Amendment, but I made a decision that this fellow crossed the line.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Our next question, we start with you, Mr. Swanson. What role has legal scholarship and continued education played in your career, and how do you stay informed about evolving legal trends?
Yeah, so this was talked about earlier in terms of all the resources that are available to us. We have a weekly law digest that we can receive, and then if we want to read the full case is available to us. So I do that in addition to the normal going to CLE conferences, and anytime you argue a motion, anytime you draft a case that has something unique in it, you are doing legal research and that helps you. But the other thing that you have to keep in mind about the value of these legal education events is that you get a chance to talk to your peers. You get to communicate and commiserate with other lawyers who are going through some of the same things that you're going through. So we share ideas. So the personal idea sharing is very important. I've had a few very good experienced prosecutors through the years that have helped me, and I'm in a position now where I'm helping other prosecutors who are running into new issues. That communication among the community, in addition to your legal education, is essential to your growth as a lawyer and sometimes keeping your sanity.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Again, Judge Lynch, the question is, what role has legal scholarship and continued education played in your career, and how do you stay informed about evolving legal trends?
Well, first of all, I spent 14 years as a law clerk at the Honorable Paul G. Hatfield. It was a little bit different of a turn in career, but it was so informative to me because of the magnitude of the cases I was able to work with him on. That gave me a foundation in legal scholarship, to be honest about it. In terms of continuing legal scholarship, I did lots of those mistresses as saying goes, but I keep up on the law through reading Montana court decisions, Ninth Circuit decisions, United States Supreme Court decisions. One of the things in terms of legal scholarship that I'm very proud of was started by my colleague, District Judge Don Malloy. And for 14 years, I with him participated in what was called the Judicial Institute, where we bring in 30 to 40 government teachers throughout the state of Montana and have a three-day seminar for them so that we could encourage them and instruct them, so to speak, on the judicial system, because oftentimes people don't understand the judicial system. The feedback I have had from most people over the years has just been astounding and made me feel good about it.
Thank you, Judge Lynch. Do you have a final 30-second rebuttal here? Rebuttal! Oh my God, I cannot stop! Response or rebuttal. You take your choice on what word you want to use. Your final 30 seconds here.
Final thing I would say when we talk specifically about the issue of emerging issues in the law is we are not alone. We are not, number one, this is not the first time Montana has faced this issue of tug of war between the legislature and the judiciary. This is not the first time that candidates have had this conversation of whether they're conservative or liberal or activist or restrained. And we're not the only state in the nation that's facing this problem right now. So I do think another part of what we should do is learn from others, learn from our past, and learn from watching what other states are doing, because we're all kind of going through some version of the same struggle. And I think the legal profession everywhere in this country wants a judiciary that, as Judge Lynch says, it has authority because it has credibility. We all want that. We're all struggling toward that. And I think we can learn from others as well.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. We've made it to the point in the evening, gentlemen, where we have 2 minutes for our closing remarks. And Judge Jerry Lynch, we will start with you. Why do you believe that you are the best candidate for Chief Justice?
The answer is fairly simple. Again, I don't mean to sound arrogant. It's fairly difficult to talk about your own morals. But I will say this. I've had nearly 40 years in the legal profession. I was selected to be a United States Magistrate Judge, contrary to some of the political stuff that's out there. I was selected by a merit selection panel of citizens, of judges, and lawyers. And out of the maybe 50-some people that applied, I was selected to one of the three to be suggested to the district judges of the United States District Court for the District of Montana. That panel of judges was a broad panel. There were four Republican appointees. I don't have to go through the names. There was one Democratic appointee. The point I'm making is this. Those judges respected my ability and chose me, thankfully, to be the United States Magistrate Judge for the District of Montana. No greater honor could I have experienced in my life other than go to become the Chief Justice. But what I'm saying is, don't listen to politics about how I was a Clinton regime appointee. I think, if I remember right, Clinton was out of office for 4 years before I ever received the dignity of that position. So, long and short, I have, again, it's hard to say this, I don't want to sound arrogant, I have more experience, certainly than Mr. Swanson, and that's not a degrading remark. I have more experience and as much experience as anybody in the state of Montana in terms of legal experience and legal scholarship.
Thank you, Judge Jerry Lynch. And your time for 2 minutes. Why do you believe, Mr. Swanson, that you are the best candidate for Chief Justice?
I was asked at one point this year, what's the most important attribute for a member of the Supreme Court? And I said, the commitment to learning. Because every day we're going to face a new and challenging case. Every day we're going to have a conversation with our colleagues where we may agree or we may disagree, and then the next day it's a different conversation on a different case. And if we think we know it all, if we think we are the smartest, if we think we've seen this 100 times before and therefore we don't give our very best, then at that point we begin being worse at our job rather than better. So commitment to learning is what I pledge to each and every one of you. And I also pledge a fair and unbiased approach to every case. The reason that I think I can serve as a Chief Justice uniquely at this time is because we are going through a political dispute and a political fight in this state that is largely unnecessary, but more importantly, it shouldn't be permanent. We need to move on to the future rather than refighting the battles of 2021. And to do that, we need to have a conversation among the judiciary and saying, maybe we need to write our opinions clearer, I don't know, or maybe we need to, maybe the legislature, I'll tell you this, the legislature probably needs to do a better job drafting some of their laws. But then the other thing that has to happen is the Chief Justice has to have a conversation with the legislature saying, you might be mad at the judiciary, but don't cut our budget. Because it hurts every Montanan. It doesn't just give you the chance of poking the judges in the eye. That's the kind of conversation that's going to be difficult to have. I think I'm positioned to have that conversation, to defend and advocate for the judiciary, but to do it in a way where I'm not dropping, as we would say, I'm not throwing a dead skunk on the table in these committee hearings. And then I do have leadership experience, which we haven't talked about that much, in the military, where I've had to lead large organizations over large distances and get cooperation, not command, opportunity to get things done. We have a big task here spread over the entire state, and I believe my experience is going to let me lead that cooperative effort for all of us to have a court that we can depend on.
Thank you so much, Mr. Swanson. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time tonight. Folks in the room, let's give a big round of applause. Judge Jerry Lynch and Mr. Corey Swanson, thank you. And folks, as I'm sure we're very well aware, we are 40 days out from election time. Go out and vote. Thank you all for your time. Thank you for being here tonight. On behalf of the pre-law committee here at MSU and the Gallatin Bar Association, we appreciate you and thank you for your time.
You have just heard a debate between the candidates for the Chief Justice seat between retired federal magistrate judge, United States District Court for the District of Montana, Jerry Lynch, and Broadwater County Attorney, Corey Swanson. It was recorded on the evening of September 26, 2024, in MSU Bozeman Gaines Hall Auditorium, and was the second part of the debate featuring the four candidates running to fill the Associate Justice and Chief Justice seats on the Montana Supreme Court in this November 5, 2024 election. They were debating issues and answering questions posed by moderator Missy O'Malley. It was hosted by the Gallatin Bar Association and the Montana State Pre-Law Club. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, recorded and produced by Joy LaClaire for broadcast and archiving on listener-supported Gallatin Valley Community Radio, KGVM Bozeman. And you can help us continue to bring you quality programs of, by, and for our community by going to kgvm.org and click on the Gold Support KGVM button at the top of the page. We thank you for listening and for your support.